Welcome to On the Brink Radio, broadcast number 209. This is Jeff Phillips Weverson coming at you from the Darwin Botanical Garden. This is my third consecutive show recorded here in this beautiful Macronematon, this sacred grove of trees here in Darwin, the top end of Australia. It's Thursday, the 27th of July, 2017. This past week has been a very sacred moment in time with the heliacal rising of Sirius, the new moon, Venus, there close to the sun. It's been a very cosmic, beautiful time. This show is in honor of the plant kingdom. I'm sitting beneath who I call Grandmother Arboreus Giganteum right now, this giant, beautiful tree. She was the first really big tree that invited me to come and be with her when I very first bicycled into the botanical garden here about 5 weeks ago. And I've come to visit her just about every single day. The plant kingdom may or may not be the most ancient kingdom of life. There could be what biologists call archaea, which could have been sort of life forms that were neither plant nor animal. And I think a lot of people agree that the cyanobacteria were predecessors of all the life forms here on Earth. They're anaerobic, microscopic beings that can live under conditions. They don't need light, they don't need gravity, they don't need air, they don't need sunlight or anything. But the plant kingdom has been around far longer than animals and basically transformed the atmosphere of the ancient Earth, giving it some oxygen so that animals in their present form could breathe, including us. And they, as part of our respiratory metabolism, we breathe in air, and we primarily breathe in the oxygen. That's the part that we use, which is about 16% of the composition of the air. We breathe in the air using the oxygen, and we exhale carbon dioxide. Well, the plants, in general, inhale the carbon dioxide, and through a miraculous process called photosynthesis, they use the carbon dioxide in conjunction with the energy from the sunlight, the presence of chlorophyll, and some other essential nutrients from the soil to create their own food. Now, astronomer Thomas Gold, who I've talked about on the show before, in his book, The Depot Biosphere, he speculates a lot about the origins of life. And he said he draws the difference between life forms that might derive their energy from a source like the sun in real time versus life forms that use that energy to capture and store the energy in the form of food or food precursors. So in other words, it's kind of like the difference between if you had an electronic device that it didn't have any batteries, but it only worked when you had the solar panel pointed at the sun on a sunny day. So it would work when you had sunlight, but if there was no sunlight, it wouldn't work. There was no battery to charge. So he's talking about the difference between life forms, plants or animals or whoever, that use their energy in real time directly from a source like the sun, or it could have been other sources of like thermal energy down in the earth, for example. But so theoretically, you could have life forms that didn't store up food energy, but it makes a lot more sense for survival and longevity to be able to store up reserves of energy in the form of food or fat or something like that, so that you can use that when your primary energy source is offline, like at night or during bad weather or periods of planetary catastrophism. It's a lot to think about, but the basic difference that I've just touched on between the animal and the plant kingdom is that scientifically, plants are called autotrophs. That's AUTOTROPHS. Autotrophs. That means they make their own food. Whereas animals are heterotrophs. hetero meaning other, H-E-T-E-R-O, T-R-O-P-H-S, heterotrophs. We aren't able to make our own food, so we derive our food, which is our primary source of energy, primarily from the plant kingdom, and then some animals eat other animals, which includes many people. So that's a really, really, really big difference. I think, like the typical Western scientific mentality wants to say that plants are more primitive than animals because of this very reason. But as I like to say, au contraire, mon ami, I think the opposite is the truth. I think that because plants are autotrophic and able to make their own food, they're much more highly evolved than animals. Think how much simpler this is. Think about this. This is too big to get your head around, but think about if humans didn't have to eat. Think about it. Think about how much of our daily, weekly, monthly, hourly, and yearly time and energy goes into the whole food and eating cycle. The getting of food, which could be growing it, harvesting it, processing it, preserving it. The obtaining of food that someone else grew, processed, preserved, and stored. The preparing of it to eat. And then all the time that you spend actually eating and preparing to eat and thinking about it. How much time every day do you spend in the kitchen or at your dining room table or out with friends eating in restaurants and stuff? It's probably in order of the thing that humans spend most of their time doing, it's probably second only to sleep in the sense of how much time of the average person's waking hours or sleeping hours go into eating. Probably, if you say the average person spends 8 hours a day sleeping, they probably spend 4 hours a day eating. And this is just the consuming of the food. This isn't if you're a mom or a chef or a gardener or a farmer. The only other thing I can think of in the world of today that might take more time, less time than sleeping, but more time than eating, would be watching television. So we'll say eating in the typical Western life is the third greatest time-consuming and energy-consuming thing that people would do. Some people's mind never leaves the table. While they're finishing up one meal, they're planning the next one. You know, if you're a mom with kids, you've got to kind of be like that, but people that are 100 pounds overweight have the same mentality, but for a very different reason. So think of how much time and energy would be freed up if humans didn't need to eat. If we could just, for example, stick your foot down in the ground and turn your green photosynthesizing hair to the sun, drink some water, and stand there for a while and just manufacture all the food energy that you need. And you could probably even do other things while you were doing that. You could read or file your fingernails or maybe this, you know, in a different race of beings on Mother Earth or somewhere else, maybe you could have beings that do this. They could, photosynthesizing their food could be a martial art that they would do. You could have competition, like sort of the photosynthetic Olympics, to see who could manufacture the most food while juggling three oranges or playing a game of chess or other, you know, sort of totally gratuitous, irrelevant activities. But in a truly sane, intelligent society, people would spend their time photosynthesizing, probably engaged in very heavy-duty critical thinking about how to prevent the destruction of the planet that happened in the 20th and 21st centuries on Mother Earth. I'd really like to thank all my lovely friends that work at this little cafe called Eva's here in the Darwin Botanical Garden. They've been nice enough to let me sit up there and paint every day for about the past 2 weeks. And it's totally outdoors. And so all my artwork for the past few weeks has been totally outdoors. It's had bird poopies on it, berries dropping, and little leaves and pollen and all kind of dust and little bugs. Like, I've got really used to ants crawling on me all the time and other little insects. The past 2 days, little itsy-bitsy praying mantises have come and crawled up my arm. They must have just hatched from the egg somewhere. Little caterpillars, little spiders, they'll just sit there and look at me. And I'll film them up really close, and then they'll jump onto the ends of the camera. But it's been very special here. I love the tropics. The temperature is continuing to slowly increase. Like, I think we're hitting 33 degrees centigrade at the peak hours of the day the past 2 or 3 days. But it's very special being here with all these giant trees. But I just finished a very special painting. It's a round painting about a meter in diameter for my friend's shop called Greenies in the Knight Rapid Creek Shopping Center here in Darwin. My friends Ursula and Greeny own it, and I've known them since 2004 when I was first here. But Ursula got me to do this painting. It fits into a round window that they've got right behind their register, but I finished it and took it up there today, and everybody in the shop really loved it because I'll be showing a photo of it along with the posting for this show. But it's got probably close to 80 or 100 different kind of, like, fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and berries and plants that are very important gifts of the plant kingdom to humanity. They're the plants that don't mind letting us eat them. But I've got all your sort of normal fruits and vegetables and some more exotic ones like passion fruits, nectarines, star fruits. I've got almonds and olives and avocados and grapes and cherries and blueberries and strawberries and cucumbers, zucchini, capsicum, celery, tomatoes. I've even got gochicola, which is the Centella Asiatica. And I've got little caterpillars that are going to hatch into some butterflies and moths. And there's a big happy butterfly. There's some little ladybugs or ladybirds. There's a honeybee and a spider weaving her web. And millions of little golden grains of pollen pollinating everything. And at the top it says, "We love carbon dioxide," which is really, that's what the plant kingdom is singing out all the time. We love carbon dioxide. Because in the world today, there's a lot of people out there walking around that aren't sure about this. They might think that carbon dioxide is some evil poison that comes out of the tailpipe of your car. But au contraire, mon ami, n'est-ce pas? Carbon dioxide is a miracle molecule that makes photosynthesis possible. But I really like to thank Ursula and Greeny for their support, and my friends Gregor and Aquaria for having me stay with them, and my friend Peter Chumley for all kinds of beautiful help with this painting. He cut the round circle and he coated the painting with a clear sealer for me. I'd also like to point out the work of researcher author Jeremy Narby, that's N-A-R-B-Y, in his second book called Intelligence in Nature. He's got a really cool chapter called, I think it's called Plants as Brains. He looks at plants from the perspective of having intelligence but without having a nervous system, but he actually makes the point that even down to the fact that they've got sort of ionic information transfer systems using calcium and potassium ions like our nervous system uses, plants have this too in their tissues and their xylem and phloem tissues. It's like our arteries and veins. But he said that the plants don't actually have brains. They are brains. And that they've got a lot of the attributes that we tend to attribute only to essentially larger animals with highly developed brains, I guess beginning with the reptiles and then the amphibians and all the mammals, the primates, and then up to us. But it's very, very, very interesting. The main difference with plants is that they're in a different time frame. We can't say that they don't have self-locomotion, because they do. But they're just in a different time frame. They can move. They grow. They can actually transport themselves. But it's very, very, very slow compared to us. But time-lapse movies can reveal a lot of this stuff. So we're sort of in a chronometric chauvinism syndrome, because anything that's too fast or too slow is invisible to us. If it's too fast, it's just a buzz. And if it's too slow, it appears to be stationary and therefore dumb or unresponsive. But I love the plant kingdom. And another thing I love about plants is that they're very quiet. I don't think I've ever heard a plant make a sound. I've heard sounds being made by plants as they're acted on by, for example, people chopping them down, or like right now, you might even be able to hear it, the sound of many different leaves and fronds blowing in the wind, which is a very beautiful sound. And in Australia, the sound of eucalyptus leaves is a very unique, soothing sort of magical dreamtime sound. There aren't any eucalyptus trees in the vicinity of where I am right now, but the leaves of Grandmother Arboreus giganteum are blowing in the wind all around me. She's also got these amazing clusters of, I'm not sure whether to call them nuts or berries. From a distance, they look like clusters of grapes, but they feel more like an acorn. So I'm still not sure what kind of tree she is. She's got really long branches growing along the ground that are even longer than her vertical branches are high. And in some ways reminds me of a pahutukawa tree of New Zealand. But these clusters of these acorn-like, grape-like things are, there's lots of them all over the different parts of her trunk and limbs. And I'm looking out across at Grandmother Baobab, who I've played my flute with. And a scrub fowl just came and joined me, making that sound. They're like little chicken-like things that wake me up at 4 o'clock in the morning and shit all over my tent.
I thought I would tell you about two of my very favorite little plants. These are both non-culinary plants, but they're ones that I have a day-to-day relationship with and travel with them. One of them is called Salvia apiana, known as Grandfather White Sage. It's a plant that's indigenous to the high desert area of the southwest of America, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona. Native Americans use it as a sacred spiritual plant. It's related to the culinary sage that you can use in cooking it for tea, but it's not the same plant. But the sage that I have, that I burn, is sort of like a Native American incense or a vehicle for transporting your prayers up to the Great Spirit, is what the Native Americans say. Although you can buy bundles of it in New Age shops called smudge sticks that are used for cleansing bad energies, but I don't use it for that. the sage that I burn is the most beautiful that I've ever had, and it's grown by my friend Michael Girardello. He has a company called sagedreaming.com.au up in the mountains of Victoria, and I've interviewed him on my show and went there and helped him with the harvest 2 or 3 years ago. So I'm very blessed to be able to share his beautiful sage smoke. And people that work with plants say that you can also connect with the devas or the spirit of the plants by burning the sage around its roots. And so I try to do that whenever I can, like around some of my big tree friends here in the botanical garden. And I burn some around my other little plant that I was going to tell you about. It's called Gotu Kola, or Centella Asiatica. It's indigenous to India, Sri Lanka, Africa, and I'm pretty sure it's actually indigenous to the east coast of Australia. I've seen it growing all over dunes there for like 20 or 30 kilometers. I first learned about it when Lisbeth and I were staying with our friends Debbie and Trevor in Bailing Up, Western Australia, back in 2010. Trevor's from Sri Lanka and had a big crop of this little plant growing, so we asked him about it, and he said, like, oh yes, it's called Gotu Kola, and Sri Lanka people chop it up and make it into sort of a salsa-like pesto stuff with chilies and lime, onion, and garlic. But you also eat a few of the leaves every day for medicinal purposes, and it never really dawned on me to explore this until about 3 or 4 years ago, when I started really looking into the medicinal value of Centella Asiatica, and it's vast. There's an ancient medical tradition from India called Ayurvedic medicine. That's A-Y-U-R-V-E-D-I-C. And if you pick up a book on Ayurvedic medicine and look up Gotu Kola, which is G-O-T-U-K-O-L-A, if you look that up in the index, you'll see 50 or 60 different uses for Gotu Kola. It's their most important plant. And this whole ancient tradition has to do with many different important regenerative and metabolic functions. And it's also associated with increased longevity and also maintaining clarity of mind. And some people say that the yogis in India associate it with the ability to keep your crown chakra open. So it also tastes good. I travel with one all the time, and I've got little crops going for almost all my friends in Australia and New Zealand over the past few years. I try to eat. I'm not able to eat a few leaves every day now. In some places I'm able to, but now my little plant's doing all right. I was thinking of getting a little crop going for my friend Peter Chumley so he can have some here too. But that's my two little favorite plants, Salvia apiana and Centella asiatica. And I'd also like to honor my mom and dad, Jean and Louise Phillips. And actually today, the 28th of July, is her birthday. So I'm honoring my mom. We called her Mimi. Mimi, I honor you and love you. But this relates to the plant kingdom, because of all the people I've ever known in my life, my mom and dad both had two green thumbs. They could grow anything. They could grow any kind of plant you could imagine in trees, vegetables, flowers. They could take little clippings from anything and make it grow. They were just amazing people with plants, and our yards were always beautifully landscaped and like little forest gardens, and vegetables grew on all through the winter. My mom grew some giant tomatoes once that were bigger than a piece of bread, a variety called beefsteak. She had lots of roses. My aunt, Sarah, who was my mom's sister, she had a vast garden of these colorful flowers called irises. Iris is actually the Greek goddess of the rainbow. But some of my earliest color photography done with Kodachrome 25 in my Minolta SRT-101 was photographs of my Aunt Sarah's flowers, her irises. So anyway, I'm sitting here again today in the botanical garden painting. It's actually a holiday in Darwin today. It's the show day, which is like a county fair. So I'm sitting up at Eva's Cafe by myself under the shaded area, watching butterflies dart around and the fountain go off and on the occasional people coming by, but it's quite peaceful today. I haven't heard any motor noise all day. But so there you have it. Honor the plant kingdom. Be like a plant. On a more cosmic note, it's even possible that there could be a whole planet that was a photosynthesizing entity, or beyond that, a cluster of stars could be embedded in some photosynthesizing nebulosity, or beyond that, we could even have an entire galaxy that was like a giant plant in space, deriving energy from the light radiated by its own central core. So these are all topics for maybe some artwork that I could do. I'd like to give thanks to the Plant Kingdom for making us possible and for all the beautiful food that you allow us to eat from your families of life. And I hope that we're not causing pain or inflicting harm or damage when we eat a tomato or a carrot. Surely we are when we pick it. I guess we're killing it in the same way that if someone shoots a pig or a cow. But it seems different. It seems like that plants don't really have an isolated sense of identity like animals do, so that maybe the consciousness of the plant, the consciousness of the apples, for example, it doesn't reside so much in each apple, although each apple is a part of it, but it's like the field of consciousness represented by all apples, that is the identity of the plant being. So when, as long as there's plenty of apples, the continuity of this consciousness will be intact. I don't know, this is just some speculation, but I'd like to apologize to all the plants if we're harming you by eating them. I wish I could learn how to photosynthesize myself. But until then, this is Jeff Weverson signing off from the Darwin Botanical Garden here in the sacred Nematon. I'd like to thank all the beautiful trees and the plants, all the chlorophyll molecules and the light of Teoa, the sun, the beautiful realm of the beautiful waters, Tawaiwaya dreaming, Mitakaya Yas, and all of my family of life. Thanks for tuning into this relatively short show. And now some interesting sounds and music in honor of the plant kingdom. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.